Hello and welcome back to the Couple's Guide to Stranger Things podcast. I'm Sian.
And I am watching our baby monitor in fear.
And that's Tom. And we're just a couple of super fan parents who met through our love of Stranger Things.
In today's episode, we have just watched... What was the episode called? God, I'm rusty. Will the Wise.
Will the Wise. Chapter 4, Will the Wise.
And we're going to go ahead and discuss it as we always do.
We absolutely are. Shall we dive in?
Well, like Hopper did at the end of this episode.
Oh.
Back at it again.
Oh, the dad jokes.
New segment.
I feel like we need like a jingle.
Yeah, I can't do that every time.
No.
Anyway, yeah, so news segment. Any time something big happens that's worth mentioning, I feel like we should shove it at the start of an episode.
Yeah.
If anything, that's more important than a rewatch.
It is. And I'm sorry, what's in my head now is we do need a jingle. We need like a... Da-da-da-da.
I'll just use that every time now.
Please don't. Like... We need to find something, like maybe an audio from Stranger Things that would just like fit beautifully. Like maybe something Dustin has said or someone has said something. We're going to have to go looking now.
So yeah, I thought you were going to say like a time where they've got the news playing on the TV. Is there ever a jingle from one of them? But
maybe.
I can't think of any. But yeah, surely someone has a quote somewhere. That would be perfect for this. I need
The only thing that's in the running for me so far, because I haven't thought about it, is Dustin saying, I need my paddles! Because we need the information.
Yeah.
But I don't know how good that one is. But I'm thinking there's going to be something in season 3. With the amount of like news article kind of stuff, there's going to be something.
Either that or along the lines of I need my paddles, Dustin... saying something about books being researched and
bear with us, people. We're going to look at this. We're going to find something.
Not right now. Don't bear with us right now, but we'll think of something. Anyway, shut up, guys, and get on to the point. So, casting calls. You've probably seen already, but there is a open casting call for season 5, episode 4. And I'm sure the majority of people already knew this, really, before this ever became official.
Yeah.
But they are casting for 8-year-old versions of Mike and Will.
Mm-hmm.
And a 13-year-old Jonathan. I want to call him Charlie. Jonathan. And something you noticed is for both Jonathan and Will, it specifically says there are no scripted lines.
Yeah.
But it does not say that for Mike.
Yes. Which you can only assume with logic means Mike is going to have lines.
Yeah. The younger Mike, of course. We all know Big Mike is going to have lines.
Yeah. And that, again, logically tells me that even though I think we would all assume that this is going to be one of Will's memories, especially because we've seen photos of a kind of young Will situation.
Yeah.
We can only assume it's Will's memory because it would make more sense that Mike is talking in your memory and that you're observing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know some people think it might be some of the memories that Mike mentions to Will in season 2. You know, like, oh, I saw you on the swing, or do you remember this?
I mean,
this?
That was kindergarten for them, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So, a bit younger than 8, but...
Maybe, but I'm not too sure, really, on the American school system, actually.
Of course, this is America. God, I don't know anything.
Yeah, we don't know nothing. So, you just don't know, but it just was a little interesting thought to me that, oh, only Mike is speaking. But then that also made me sad, because I thought, is this a potential twisted... Vecna memory where little Mike is going to turn around to Will and be like, I hate you and all this, you ruined my life.
That's what I
life.
Was thinking, yeah.
Or something nasty and turn a sweet memory into something horrible. Maybe they're playing D&D.
Yeah.
And then Will turn, and Mike turns to him and is suddenly very Vecna-ish and is like, and then you get attacked with this or, you know, I have all these like... You know what I'm like. I have these little creative little...
Your imagination is Wild.
My imagination is very wild. Yeah, so just a little observation. Yeah, so that's obviously been, that's come from Carmen Cuba, casting director for Stranger Things. And yeah, it's exciting. Imagine though, for an actor, how exciting that would be if you are a young Finn Wolfhard lookalike and you love acting. You know, you'd be, oh my God.
This is you set.
Yeah, you'd be so excited. Exactly. But yeah, we couldn't not mention this.
No, exactly. Like you say, I do think any time something like this comes up, we've just got to mention them at the start of the episode. Get them out of the way because they're more important than anything else.
Yeah. But now, let's get back to our rewatch.
Not before I grab my cup of tea.
Coffee and contemplation.
But tea.
But British version.
What's a rhyme with tea about thinking?
T, B, C, V, G, D.
Okay.
So I would like to start this by asking what is wrong with us?
We have watched this episode 3 times now.
We have indeed watched this episode 3 times. The first time, well, obviously not in total. We've watched it probably 20 million times. But for this particular episode of the podcast, we watched it we watched it in March. And then baby Emmy had other plans.
Yeah.
We watched it, God, a couple of months ago.
Yeah, shortly after Emmy was born, to be honest. I think we were going to try and get into it.
But... And I'm assuming baby Emmy had different plans again.
Yeah, like I said last episode, she is our boss now. We have to bang on our hands and knees and watch our baby monitor as she tilts her head and makes you panic.
She literally instills fear into you.
Yeah, it used to be Harry, but now anytime he just moves, I'm like, as long as you're not sat up, I don't care. Emmy, she lifts a finger, and I'm like, don't do it. Let us record. Please.
Please don't make us watch World of Wise again. It's depressing.
It really is.
And now we'll discuss why. Uh-huh. Nice little segue there. Mm-hmm.
We need segue jingles.
We do need... We're going to have to really think about this. It's important.
If you listening can think of any jingle sound that is Stranger Things related, if it's from an episode or if it's just something that sounds like Stranger Things related,
yeah,
please let us know. Drop us a note.
If we remember on Saturday when this podcast comes out, we need to put like a little thing on our Instagram story for suggestions, a suggestion box.
Yeah.
For people to give us some jingle ideas, like certain lines that we could use from the show. Any season, don't mind.
No, any of them, that's fine.
Right, let's begin.
God, you mean actually focus on the topic of this episode?
8 minutes in? Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Good lord. 8 episodes in and 10:30 in the evening.
So, the episode begins with a very peaceful middle school, and then suddenly Joyce arrives almost running over children.
Sounds about right. That's Joyce in a nutshell.
So, in the seriousness though, Will is in the middle of being possessed.
Yeah, and after you've seen season 4, it's very Vecna-like, isn't it?
It is.
There's none of the eyes ghosting. He's not exactly floating up into the air, but... Yeah, he's not there in the real world. He is locked inside his head at the moment.
Yeah, and that's it, because he's like, he's surrounded by, it's like a smoke, isn't it? It's the shadow. But when you do kind of put Vecna into the context as well, those like particles going in, it's almost like, it's almost vine-like, like how Vecna is. Like the way it's all consuming him and stuff. And... Yeah, again, like we've said a million times, it's so interesting watching these scenes when you do have the later seasons and, like, that information.
Yeah, exactly, because you can watch back and you're like, oh, did they ever plan that or did they work that in season 4?
Yeah, and obviously he's not alone at this moment. Even before Joyce is there, you've got Lucas and Mike and Max and Dustin and... Yeah. honestly, Max must be thinking, what the hell am I getting myself in for?
Yeah, honestly, like, makes you wonder how she can even not believe Lucas when he says it's for her own safety later on.
Yeah.
It's like, honey, did you not see Will earlier on?
Yeah, exactly. But no, it is a really tense scene because, God, if they could see what Will is actually experiencing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's horrific.
It is horrific.
Like, they wouldn't be, like, almost stepping back from him. They'd be, like, pulling him, like...
Yeah.
Anything, desperately trying to stop what's happening.
Exactly, yeah.
But, like, cinematically as well, it's a really cool moment, though.
Yes. Yeah, it's done really well.
Yeah, it has. And, obviously, that leads on to... Joyce takes Will home, of course. And, once again... She's trying to get through to him. And, of course, he's still lying to her.
Yeah, as you would in a situation. Being a teenager who's just fed up of being treated like a baby. And fed up of everything being about him. Like he says, he just wants this to be over.
But at this point, I'm wondering, like, is that bravery or is that stupidity?
Oh, it's both.
Because
if anything, it's more stupidity. But I can understand it from the points I listed.
Yeah.
Like, I get it.
Because for me, I'd just be crying to my mum at this point.
Well, that's why I more said a teenage boy. Even in Will's scenario, I feel like teenage boys are more, I will fix this or I will just ignore it.
Yeah.
Rather than I will talk this with someone to fix it. Yeah.
Yeah. I do admire, though, that even when Will is saying that, you know, nothing happened and all this kind of thing, Joyce is just like, right, screw that.
Enough of the BS.
Yeah, enough of the BS. Here's your picture. Here's what I saw on the tape. Tell me the truth. And I'm so glad that that just immediately crumbles Will's defence.
Yeah, that's it. He realised... But do you know what? Maybe he's wondering if this is all in his head.
Yeah.
But then once he sees that his mother has seen the same thing.
Yeah.
On the VHS recording.
Yeah.
I guess that kind of confirms in his head. Because I don't think his face ever shows a bit of, oh, Christ, fine.
Yeah.
It's more of a relief or a shock and surprise.
Yeah, because you would be thinking... Is this PTSD?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the amount of people that sadly experience PTSD will know that you get flashbacks, you get these out-of-body experiences.
Hopper himself says that, and so does Sam at one point. So, yeah, you would think that you're just losing your mind, but then the fact that your mother's just drawn the same thing and apparently traced it off the TV... That's going to confirm 100% that what you're seeing is real.
And the fact that she says to him, I think this is real. And you can just see the relief in him when she does that.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. It's more relief than just, you know, you'd think if he was trying to hide it on purpose for what I said earlier, to be honest. Yeah, I'm completely contradicting myself here now. But, yeah, it's more of a, I think he didn't believe himself.
No.
Until this moment. And then it gave a bit of a relief of, okay, I'm not going crazy, this is real, and we actually need to fix this then.
Yeah.
So, I think that's what that is there then.
And it's like we go from those kind of scenes of finally an honest conversation to a scene that makes us both so sad and makes me want to punch myself because we've had to see it three times in a short amount of time. And that's Hopper and Al's big fight.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. You see Al walking through the woods.
Yeah.
She sees Hopper on the porch and you can see in her face she knows what she's in for.
She does. She kind of does like a sigh like... Oh,
here we go.
Here we go. But bless her, she's already so like broken at this point.
Exactly. It's... Like I say, when Hopper gets on her for not being able to follow three simple rules, as he puts it.
Yeah.
It's like, mate, think about it. She's been following those three simple rules for nearly a year. 350-something days.
Yeah.
And the fact that she's not broken them within that.
Yeah.
That she's only just done now.
Yeah.
You cannot get mad at her for this.
And it's hard because she goes into it, like I said, broken. She is not up for a fight. She doesn't she's want not. To fight. She just wants to go to bed and probably cry.
Yeah, while exactly.
Hopper, in my opinion, provokes her so much in the scene because yeah. he wants to have a fight because he's angry and that's his way of communicating.
Yeah. I said it later on, like in the morning, but in the morning he's literally about to apologise to yeah. Al. He's out to door. He's about to have a proper talk and then, like I said, I think you spotted he was playing with
Sarah's like,
armband, or well, hairband on yeah. his wrist. And you're wondering if this triggers the change. But, yeah, he's about to talk, maybe apologise, and then suddenly he turns and he lets his ego get the better of him.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes him root for this argument as she comes home, is that ego of, I am the boss, you listen to me.
Yes.
It's...
Because I think he yeah. probably... Elle is more powerful than Hopper. So he has to have a louder voice.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. He 100% knows that.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, anyone knows that. Let's be honest.
I think he feels like if he hasn't got his authority, he's got nothing.
Yeah. And I think that, yeah, you raise a very good point there because that's all he can do.
Yeah.
Is try to take control that way. Because, like we were saying earlier, it's like talking to a toddler sometimes. You can't yeah. win.
I was just going to say, Hopper, we're going to give you some parenting advice here from having a toddler who can go from 0 to 100 within seconds. If I tell Harry there's no rice cakes, that's it.
If he had telekinesis, our windows would be smashed.
Yeah, they would. And the thing is, when they're experiencing these big emotions, which clearly Elle was,
yeah,
you don't poke, what do they call it, like a sleeping dragon or something like that. Yeah. Like, you don't do that.
You don't get up in their face. Into the fire. You,
yeah.
That's it. You need to let them have their moment.
Yes.
And then when they're ready, you can potentially go and talk about it. But you've got to be so careful.
Yeah, it's never going to make things easier and it's not going to cool down this boiling volcano, exactly, you know, if you get closer up to it.
No, exactly. It's like you've got a raging inferno and then you just throw in some more fuel. It's going to blow up in your face.
Absolutely. And so I'm sorry, Hopper. You've got no one to blame but yourself in this situation. Yeah, Hopper, you were very much in the wrong here.
Hopper, you're a muppet in this scene.
Yeah.
For lack of a better name, you are a right old muppet in this moment.
But yeah, like you say, though, he could have rectified the situation in the morning. And I'm so frustrated that he didn't.
Yeah. Like, he just needed to apologise there and then.
Yeah.
He was so close to doing so.
Yeah.
And then, like I say, I'm sure it's the ego. He's got a big ego. And
he does.
It gets better of him here.
Yeah, it does. So we go from these kind of scenarios to what's happening with Jonathan and Nancy. A completely different situation, but so vital for what's going to come into the rest of the season. And that is them, like where we left them off, like they're at that park where they were going to be meeting Barb's mum and they know they're being watched.
Yeah, well, that's the plan.
It is the plan. But I think the nerves are real.
Oh, God,
I think
yeah.
they know they're in for a risk.
They don't know 100% what they're going to do.
No.
Obviously, it's not like over the phone they said, right, guys, we want you to take us to the lab so that we can record one of you saying stuff that puts you right in the pooper.
Yeah, I mean, ironically, it's a bit like going back to the Hopper and Elle thing about don't touch a sleeping dragon. It's the same kind of thing. They don't know what they're going to get.
Exactly, that's it. They know their phone calls are listened to.
These are dangerous people.
Yeah, they know that they're going to be followed exactly to where they said. And they know they're going to have lab goons all over them. And yeah, they do.
I remember the first time I ever watched it, I was quite surprised and proud when I saw the tape because that's not what I thought was going to happen.
No, same here. I'm not sure what I was thinking they were going in for.
Yeah.
But yeah, when Nancy then reveals the tape, I was like, ah, genius at play.
Yeah, I think the first time I watched it, I do think I genuinely believed that they had full intention of meeting Barb's mum in the park to talk to her. That was my thought process. But then when I saw the tape, obviously all the puzzles came together and I was like, ah, they weren't being stupid. This was all planned perfectly.
Yeah, I can't think back to my mindset originally. I don't know if I thought they were being stupid and genuinely wanted to speak to the parents. I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
But nowadays, you know they're not stupid, really, in hindsight. So, in my opinion, it is a bit obvious that they must be planning something.
Yeah. And the thing is now, they've seen the vines, they've seen how it's spreading, and they have got this audio, this damning audio, and now, you know, as we'll know later on in the season, it's what do they do with this audio?
Exactly.
How can they expose them?
Exactly that, yeah. That's it. I mean, that's it. I don't think they know that the gates are spreading underground, because the lab themselves don't know that.
Yeah.
They know they want to, but they don't know that it's succeeded.
Yeah.
They just see the gate and vines coming off of that. And so they're keeping that back, but vines always win.
Yeah.
And where they can't see, it's gone right down and all over the place.
And this is the thing, and it's spreading within Will. And I think it's quite foreboding, quite scary, how quickly it can start to change Will's character.
Yeah, like,
this is like less than 24 hours, and up comes up comes the bath scene where, you know, I was going to say Nancy then, where Joyce is trying to warm back up his body temperature, and
he just wastes all that water.
And we've right got got like that scene playing while Mr. Clark in the science class is talking about
natural fear responses. Yeah,
natural fear responses and defense mechanisms to fear and all this, and it is.
You can see he seems to fear the concept of warmth.
Yeah.
As if it hurts.
And I mean, we already know, because obviously we've seen the scene of the shadow going within him, but it just becomes more and more in your mind about this parasite that's stirring inside of Will.
Yeah.
And is already starting to make its own opinion known. It is scary how quickly that is happening.
Exactly, yeah.
And then literally you've got this seriousness happening, and then you've got Dustin feeding Dart, while poor Mike, Lucas and Max are literally pulling rubbish out of the dumpster looking for him.
Yeah. Honestly, how can Dustin keep a straight face?
I know.
And they're like, yeah, we're looking for Dart. It's like,
they're literally
Dart's in my bedroom in a cage and is all happy.
Poor Lucas literally has drawn the short straw and is in a dumpster.
And he absolutely stinks for it.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if Lucas has ever really let him forget that.
I could bet he constantly brings it up. Like, that, you owe me.
Yeah. You allowed me to be in a dumpster while Dart was safely in your home.
If I don't kill you for it, you owe me.
Yeah. And there's been another kind of change of pace. This is what I love again. I know we've said this a million times, but I love all the sub-stories.
Yeah.
And how eventually everything will come back round.
Exactly, that's it. It's, again, a bit like Vines.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
We started from one place.
Yeah.
And the story just spreads out.
Yeah.
All over. And you've got these constant, ongoing, different storylines of everyone else. And then, right at the end, they all group back up into one central hub.
I love that. That's so true. But because literally I was like, oh, how do I weave in this kind of segment of Billy and Steve and the basketball and everything? But I do think it's important, because we have discussed about Billy, and, you know, one minute he's shoving Steve to the ground because that's what he wants people to see. He wants people to see him being the alpha dog. And even though he very much does want to be that, and he is that, let's be honest, he almost recognises power and, to a very small extent, respects it.
Yeah, I think he wants to be the winner in that sense. He wants to beat that power. But he still does wants respect. A
team of powerful people.
Yeah, that's it. He still respects anyone who has that power.
Yeah, because like we've said, like at the end of season two, when Max gains her power against Billy, when it comes to season three, he relatively leaves her alone.
Yeah, I don't think there are any moments where he's really hostile towards Max.
No, not until he's actually taken over.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think there is a moment, really.
No, so he leaves her to be, you know. And that's because, I suppose, he then has to respect her power because of how, because of what she does at the end of season two.
Yep. Scares the living nuts off him.
Yeah. But it is, I mean, I think I'm going to talk about this here, actually. It just makes sense. Like, Max's perception of men, it's not great.
No, exactly. And you can't blame her.
No.
When her perception of men is anyone before her move to Hawkins, and then you've got Neil and Billy.
Yeah.
Like, what great examples.
I say this being a huge Mike lover, but even
he
Mike...
He treats her like crap.
Because in this particular episode, we have the moment where Mike has been trying to get in touch with Will, no answer at home, and he says to Justin and Lucas, right, we need to talk, and he's quite rude to Max. It's like, party members only.
Yeah.
Takes them away. And then Max is understandably frustrated, and Lucas is trying to talk to her at the end of the school day, and she's just like, did you treat Elle like this?
Yeah.
You know, you tell me you want me to be your friend, and then you treat me like garbage.
That's it. The way I see it, you can, like, there's a reason Mike is saying party members only.
Oh, we know that, yeah.
Because obviously they're then talking about the Upside Down, and nobody's allowed to know that.
Yeah.
So, no, you know, from our party perspective, from the party perspective, there's a genuine reason.
But there is.
The downside to that is they can't tell Max that. And so, yeah, she just thinks these clowns, one minute they're saying they want to be my friend, and then the next minute I'm not allowed to join them in their little discussion game.
And the thing is, though, in like that scene, it's like Mike hasn't even acknowledged she's there, because a more polite way of going about it would have been him saying, Lucas, Justin, I need to speak to you alone.
Yeah, exactly. He just runs past saying, meeting now,
yeah.
AV room.
So of course Max is like, right, okay, I'm gonna stand up.
And then, yeah, it's only when she gets up and he hears movement behind him, he's like, oh god, yeah, you exist,
you're here,
go away,
I'm not talking about you. So yeah, it is, it's understandable for Max to have this perception of them,
yeah.
And everything, and then bless her, she's literally gone that day from one terrible situation, literally digging through trash for these boys,
yeah,
to feeling that she's being treated like trash by them,
yeah,
to then unfortunately
being treated like trash,
yeah,
by Billy,
being sat in that car with Billy, him grabbing her hand, which as you say, like, is improvisation by Dacre, which makes it even more powerful and probably more shocking to Sadie.
Yeah, exactly, because she wasn't expecting it, obviously.
Yeah.
if I'm sure, like, it was official where I heard it was improv anyway.
Yeah.
But him grabbing her arm wasn't planned.
Yeah, it makes it more authentic.
It does.
A scene. And yeah, that poor girl. She just goes from one bad situation to the next, to the next, to the next. So you can understand at this point her perception of men.
Yeah, exactly. And that's it. When it comes into season three then, where the second Mike does something wrong, she's like, oh, dump him.
I knew it.
Dump him right now.
Yeah.
That's it. It's, you can understand her point of view from there.
I think it's like held in resentment, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, especially if you've read Runaway Max.
Yeah.
Like, it all makes sense. As much as I do think the Malevolent breakup in season three is so forced.
Yeah.
Just to get a bit of separation in the characters.
Yeah.
You can understand Max's perception.
Yeah, you can. Because 100%. The thing is, it's like she has supported their relationship.
Yeah,
clearly like over that year, and like says in the beginning of season three, you know, oh, I think it's sweet,
yeah,
so
as they're walking through them all, yeah.
Yeah, and but she clearly, like she has with all these other men, and one of the reasons Wagner goes for her, she holds in her feelings, she holds in the resentment and everything.
Exactly, that's it. And so the second Mike does something wrong, she's like, oh, another one, I knew it.
Yeah. She's like, right, let me open the filing cabinet in my brain on Mike, pull out all the evidence, there you go, I knew it.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it, yes. Obviously, no ill intentions on Mike's side, but that's it, on Max's perspective.
Yeah.
That's all a man is.
Because this is it, like, we have the, ironically, we have the insight, you know,
yeah.
We have got the gift of insight. We know what Mike is going through.
Exactly.
The trauma he is going through. And we know what Max is going through.
That's it. And that's, they are two really well-fueled characters.
They are.
For this kind of conflict.
Who I genuinely think could be really good friends one day.
If they just sat down and talked.
Because in a way,
they would be great friends.
They're almost kind of similar. And which is probably why Elle is drawn to Max as well. They're strong. They're outspoken. They both can be moody.
Yes.
They both think they're right a lot of the time. They are quite similar.
Yeah.
And they both hold in their trauma, really.
Yeah. I mean, my God, that is Max in season four in a nutshell.
Of course.
Holding in trauma, speaking to nobody. But,
And we know Mike did that in season two. The only person he spoke to was technically Finn Air. He didn't know that Elle was listening.
Yeah. And yes, he opens up to Will later on, but
yeah,
it's still been an entire year of
But Max eventually opens up to Lucas.
Yeah.
Mm. So yeah, they are really similar.
They are, yeah.
And yeah, as I say, I think that's why Elle is drawn to Max as well, because it reminds her of the kind of strength and character of Mike.
Exactly.
One of the other big moments, really, of this episode is the whole scenes with Hopper and Joyce and Will.
Yeah, with him drawing all the vines.
Yeah, because I love how they're trying to get him to explain what the situation is.
Yeah, and Joyce being the amazing mother she is.
Yeah, knowing him so well.
Exactly, just it clicks in her head, right, if you can't tell us about it, draw it. And what
that
a perfect
lights, yeah.
route for Will, of all people.
Yeah, that like lights something up in him, because he's like, yes, I can do that.
That's
because
his language.
It's almost like Vecna or the Shadow is like, no, I'm not going to let you talk about what you're seeing. I'm not going to let you verbalise it.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
It's like Will's drawing is almost a completely separate thing. Ironically, it's like he never loses control of his fingers, if that makes sense.
I was just going to say,
because later on he does
Morse
code.
Morse code, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I was going to say the same thing. It's in a subconsciousness. He's still got control of his drawing, and then later on, just that little bit in there to tap out some Morse code.
And this is the thing. Obviously, I know that to use the reflexes in your fingers and things like that, of course it all stems from the brain, but it's quite a nice representation as well that the spreading, it obviously starts in the brain, and it's like the last things to go are like the fingers.
Yeah.
So it's like he still has that control.
Yeah.
So
that's it. There's still a little bit of Will lingering in there.
Yeah. So it's just a good little representation there. And obviously the drawings he does at first, especially Hopper, is like,
it's just scribbles.
Yeah, what the hell is this?
Exactly.
But we were saying Joyce needs to be a detective.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. If not through season 3 and 4, once season 5 is through and done, everyone's recovering and Hawkins is back on its feet, Joyce does not need to go back to Melvolts.
No.
She needs to be a detective.
She literally sees a small, black, faint line, and then it's like, wait, hang on, I saw that on a different drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And then lines them up.
perfectly. Yeah. That's it. And then, you know, I'm sure she's a bit detective-like in season 3 and 4 as well.
She is,
I mean,
yeah.
Obviously with the voodoo dolls in season 4, it's a bit obvious what's going on there. But through season 3 as well, it's, yeah, she's constantly...
Obviously finding the Russians and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. She's constantly using that brain of hers. So, yeah, Hopper needs her on his team.
Yeah, he does.
He might not like... Well, I say he might not like that fact. He might not have liked that fact through season 1 and 2. But he's been asking her on dates now, so I'm sure he loves that fact at this point.
Yeah, I think he would eventually respect that.
Yeah.
That, well, to be honest, she'd be more powerful than him. And I think, hopefully, after Russia, he would have had a bit of a kind of character change and understand what's important and that his ego is not the most important thing.
I think that's happened in the... You can see in the very end of season 4 the moment of him and Mike just hugging it out.
Yes.
I think that is such an important little snippet
of as to who Hopper's going to be.
Yeah, who Hopper's going to come after all of this. I think it's all sobered him up.
Yeah.
Well, quite literally from season 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think Hopper has changed, and I think, yeah, he's much more open to knowing that other people sometimes want the best for his family as well.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, especially, like I say, in the sense of Mike. There is a moment in season 3 as well, when it's just after him and Elle have the... I know you're the most powerful, but we need to keep you safe sort of thing.
When they're in the mall, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, just sat there in the mall. And then Mike comes to sort of take her away and he's... What does he say? Like, take care of her or something?
Something along those lines,
yeah. Or take care of yourself. And, yeah, I think from that moment...
It's like
I
almost think, a passing of a torch, isn't it?
It is. And I think in that moment, I think Hopper's... starting to accept the fact that Mike genuinely just wants the best for Al.
Yeah.
That
they're not too dissimilar in that sense.
Exactly, that's it. You know, he's... Yes, they're teenagers, but they're not like what he was.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, go through any of this, it ages you. So...
Definitely. That's yeah. it. Like, they are not as immature as he is expecting them to be. And Elle can share affection. You know, she can love him as a father whilst also being able to love her boyfriend as romantically, you yeah, know.
Exactly.
She has got enough love to give and yeah. he needs to understand that as well.
That's it, yeah. And I think it's that moment that he accepts Mike for who he is. And then yeah. through season 4 you can see that. I think it's grown.
Yeah.
Because if anything, he's like, you know, you've obviously helped keep Elle safe.
Yes.
Obviously, Joyce has. But Mike has as well.
Yeah.
You know, he hasn't left her. He's still there.
But, like, going back, ironically, to this episode, Hopper does make a mistake in my eyes. He is smart enough and he's aware enough that when he does see all the drawings matched together, that he understands that they're vines and what
yeah,
that means. Yeah,
exactly. It clicks in his head that this is what's been killing all the pumpkin patches.
Yes. But it just frustrates me that he leaves without telling Joyce where he is going.
Yeah, honestly, it's like, stop being the lone hero.
Yeah.
It's like, I get from a point of view that he probably doesn't want Joyce coming to look for him or leave him with, or following him. But like you said, would she really leave Will at the moment?
I really don't think she would leave Will at the moment.
Exactly.
I think she would trust that Hopper's going to look at vines. Don't get me wrong, I'm sure she'd be hell curious. And maybe if Jonathan had been home, she would have been like, you stay with your brother.
Yeah.
I'm going with Hopper. But no, Will's very much alone, so she wouldn't leave him. I
no
really
chance.
Don't think she'd leave him.
No.
But if he just said, you know, it's vines or whatever, listen, I'm going to whatever farm, like, I'm going to this pumpkin patch, I'll be back
I think they're linked, yeah.
That's all he needed to say. And yeah, I know that they're after like a cinematic effect, but even that would work, because I'm sure he'd run off and she'd be thinking, pumpkin patch, what the hell?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like, that still could have worked, but obviously I understand everyone that it's, you know, it's part of the story, because then it later leads to, it leads to Bob
suspense, isn't
being,
it?
You know, able to find him, and obviously Will using the insight to find him. So I know it all happens for a reason, but it just frustrates me that it's like, come on,
yeah,
you're the chief of police. You should know to tell people when you're going somewhere.
Exactly, yeah. It's just another one of those cases of him wanting to be the lone warrior that doesn't need any backup.
Yeah, and, you know, while this is going on, you've got Elle in the cabin. Obviously, Hopper's off doing all of this. And yeah, she's tidying up. You said that she should have used her powers for the whole thing.
Well, not even should have. It surprises you that someone like her wouldn't.
Yeah.
For some of it.
I can honestly only think that it's just tired her out, because, like, the bookcase must be heavy. And, like, she lifts that with her powers. And, you know, I would say she's at her strongest in season 3, isn't she, until she resurges with her powers in the end of season 4.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
so
that's
she's
it.
Still,
like,
not really there with her powers.
No, I suppose so. It's more like when she's sweeping up the glass.
Yeah, yeah.
You think, would you really be there sweeping with a brush when you can just think about picking up all of glass and just shoving it to the side?
I know I would.
Exactly, that's the problem. With her getting nosebleeds, clearly it's not good for her head.
Using the telekinesis.
Yeah. You know, there's a reason it causes her to bleed. It's doing some damage. But that's my problem. I'd never stop. I'd end up dying from blood loss, probably, out of my nose, if I had telekinesis.
I honestly think as well, maybe it's a bit of a respect to Hopper to almost show remorse, is that he's probably told her time and time again, listen, you only use your powers when you absolutely have to.
Yeah.
It's like Elle can't really lift that bookcase on her own. I imagine it's like an oak. It's like heavy.
It's going to be heavy.
It's going to be heavy. So, of course, she uses her powers for that. But the majority of the other stuff, she does tend to do by hand.
Yeah.
So I do think it's a kind of remorse kind of action, as, like, she doesn't want to disrespect him even when he's not there.
Yeah, I imagine. Because what are the 3 rules? So there's the... keep the blinds closed, no going outside, and
we're not stupid.
Well, they're called the not stupid rules.
Yeah,
so I don't think that's one of them. I can't remember what the 3rd one is, but I feel like there's a conversation about her powers and only using them when absolutely necessary. The problem is, I'm trying to think if that's in the show or in someone's story.
Probably a bit of both. I mean, even if it's not in the show, it's clearly implied.
I mean, it only makes sense, doesn't it? It's like, obviously, you know, they're a part of you. We can't just close them off forever. And hell, with the upside down, we kind of need you to have them just in case. But you shouldn't rely on them, because then when you are out in the real world, you're just going to go ahead and accidentally do something without thinking about it. And then the entire world has seen you do that, and you're like, uh-oh. So get used to doing things without.
And the thing is, because we see her in earlier episodes changing the channel and stuff with her powers, I do think this scene where she's mainly clearing up manually is a show of remorse / respect to
Hopper.
Maybe,
yeah. Maybe, because, I mean, yeah, obviously, in terms of the TV life... You can't blame her for that. You're comfortable.
No,
you
don't blame her. But
you don't want to get up just to change the channel, just to sit back down and be like, nope, bored of that as well.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I feel so sorry for the pre-remote generation.
Couch potato wouldn't have been a thing then, really, would it?
No, it wasn't. There's a meme that perfectly depicts that.
But yeah, obviously, when she's clearing up, she comes across a very vital discovery.
Yes. That's it. She spots the little, what would you even call it? I was going to say manhole, but
like a latch, like a
little hatch in the floor. Yeah, and pokes her head down, and looks through the boxes, and you can see one labeled New York, what enabled Vietnam.
Yeah.
And then finally, her eyes land on the one labelled Hawkins Lab.
Yeah. I mean, she's a brave girl for even doing that. Like, as we all know, I've got arachnophobia. There's no way on this earth I'd be popping my head down
Oh,
there.
Hell no. Hmm? Oh, hell no. Thing is, I don't think Kel's really scared of anything.
That's true.
Except for anyone from the lab.
And this is the thing. When she finds this paperwork on the lab, I'm sure she's not expecting to see a Terry Ives file. She's probably wanting to read up on herself. But then, of course, she sees that picture of Papa and she sees this beautiful lady who, obviously, they're actresses, but you would imagine she's thinking, she looks like me.
Yeah, I was going to say, she can probably see a bit of herself in this woman.
And a resemblance, yeah.
Yeah, so it kind of, you know, she moves her finger over to her and you can see in her mind, she's thinking, Mama? I don't think she says it out loud, does she? But you can...
No.
Clearly, because that's it. She lingers on Brenner and she does say, Papa.
Yeah.
And then when she moves her finger over to Terry, you can clearly, you can practically hear in her head her going, is this Mama?
Yeah, and then obviously she sees the news clippings that say about a woman that the lab have, you know, stolen her baby. Oh, speaking of babies, our baby's being vocal right now.
Emmy!
Well, sorry about that, people. For you, that was a second. For us, that was a good 10 minutes of soothing, Emmy.
It's getting dangerously close to midnight, Emmy. I need you to understand. We need to finish this.
We do need to finish this. We are going to fire through. Come on, we got this. So, obviously, Els found all this stuff on Terry. Is understanding that she is probably her mother. And potentially what Hopper has said is not true. Yeah. Considering this paperwork is in his cabin, he knew of her mother, she can't help herself but look in the void.
Yeah, exactly, because that's it. Hopper has previously told her in a flashback moment between him and Elle shortly after he found her and took her in. She asks about her own mother while he's reading the book to her. And he... It's hard because I can understand where he's coming from because it's quite a loaded topic. But he says, no, she's gone.
Yeah,
implying, implying dead. And I guess, yeah, like I say, from a certain angle, I can understand his reasoning.
Yeah.
Because it's one hell of a loaded topic to try and explain to a 12, 13-year-old girl that your mum's not dead, but she's mentally dead. You know, she's a shell that has no mental capacity at all.
Yeah. And obviously, Elle looks in the void and sees Terry, sees she is alive. And I'm always curious in this scene when Elle says, Mama, and Terry opens her eyes and looks at her. She's clearly, Terry I'm talking about now, has still got that connection with the void and understands it on a level, still has a kind of magic with it, like Elle does. It's really interesting.
It is, and if anything, this little snippet there, the fact that Terry reacts to Jane being in front of her, clearly shows that to an extent she's still in there.
Yeah.
You know, she's not a complete vegetable. She is a vegetable on the outside. But inside that head, if anything, the lab have given Terry the opportunity to fully flesh out her void ability.
Yeah.
If anything, you know, if she is still mentally alive in there to any extent, she probably is focusing on that because it's probably the only thing she can do.
It's a terribly, it's bittersweet, but it's just a horrible.
It is horrible.
Haunting situation.
It really is, because you can only imagine, if you were in that position, you know, if you could access the void and astral project, as it's called, to watch anyone, she's going to be watching Elle constantly.
Yeah.
She's never going to be away from her baby girl.
No.
It's but torture in a way. I suppose it would be torture, so maybe she'd be watching it, see that, okay, they've not just killed her or anything, they're not torture. I mean, well, but if anything, she may end up needing to look away, in a sense. I was going to say, if she's constantly watching, then there wouldn't be a moment where she's shocked to see her daughter in front of her in void space.
I think, I personally feel that when we have those moments of Brenna where people are like, oh, is he really that horrible? I'm sorry, but you just need to think about what he did to Terry, because in my opinion, he gave her a fate worse than death.
He did, 100%, and that's it. That's why I said, you know, in terms of seeing the fact that Al is alive and all that and being brought up by this man, you know, it was a torture, because what we were saying earlier about, well, we haven't mentioned Al being a toddler, but we were joking about, imagine having to bring up Elle as a toddler.
Yeah.
You know, through tantrums and all that, and her just being like, well, I'm just going to throw you in the air. Like, they would have had that. But, you know, Henry has a chip in his neck to stop him from using his powers. They've got that ability to suppress their powers.
Yeah.
I imagine they probably would be doing that to these children while they're at a dangerous age, the terrible twos in a nutshell. And more so, they've also got the taser sticks that we know they use on Callie.
Yeah.
And most likely have used on Elle. So it is a torture, very much so.
It is.
That's where I'm getting at. You know, Terry probably is keeping a tab on Elle just to make sure she's safe. But at the same time, knowing you can't do anything, would you really be watching that all the time? You would just have to look away, wouldn't you?
I mean, it's an impossible question.
It really is.
It is, because as a parent, you just want to be there
constantly.
That's your only contact with your child.
It is. But then, yeah, it's that torture of having to watch that happen. It's.
But speaking of torture, it's just, like I've said, this is one of the main reasons why I'm so frustrated with us having had to watch this 3 times for the podcast, because that scene is so horrible. And I can say now, especially as a mother, seeing Elle sobbing as her mother disappears and going, "Mama, Mama," it just, it breaks my soul on a brand new level.
Yeah, exactly, because that's it. You, before you have kids, you can sort of imagine yourself in that scenario to an extent.
Yeah, you still sympathise.
You obviously sympathise, but once you are that parent and you just imagine Elle being your daughter,
you see this vulnerable child.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter that she is the most powerful entity on the earth.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that she could literally crush a building with a fort. She's still a vulnerable child who just needs her mother.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And this is the thing as well. It's like, that's why we're so protective of Max as well. Because again, we're looking at it from a parent point of view now. But we're really protective of Mike as well. And
yeah,
because of the traumas he goes through in season 2. And he's trying to find his purpose. And he wants to help people. And that's why we find Mike now arriving at the buyer's house. Because he wants to help.
Yeah.
And Joyce is all for turning him away. Until he says, like, you know, that he knows.
Yeah, about, I can't remember the exactly monster. What he said. That's it, he mentioned the shadow monster. Yeah, and then I guess that just, you know, at that point, Joyce is probably like, no, I can't bring you into this again. We've already been through it last year, but then.
But she's probably thinking any information
exactly,
is vital.
Exactly, but then that's it. You're going to have two voices. You're going to have the angel and the devil on your shoulders. The angel is like, no, don't get him involved. He's just a kid. He doesn't need to be in this. He's already had it last year.
Yeah.
And then on the other shoulder, you've got, no, he knows something. He can probably help Will. Get him in here.
But I think unlike Hopper at this point, Joyce has respect for Mike, and she has respect for his intelligence.
Yes.
And how he helped through the first season and how he helped the year before. And so, yeah, I think that's another reason why she does pull him into it. And it did get me thinking, though, like, in this situation, if Hopper had still been there, would he have been? Because, obviously, he doesn't want to involve Mike, but he also doesn't want to involve Mike on a different level. And that other level is Elle. He knows how this is going to impact her. He knows that Elle is watching Mike.
Yeah.
So, you know, if she sees Mike with Hopper, she's going to be so furious.
A few more than just... It'd be more than windows smashing at this point.
Yeah, because, you know, Mike is the person she wants to see more than anyone. So to think that, you know, Hopper is interacting with him in this kind of sense, not just like Mike coming to the police station or anything like that to talk about maybe whereabouts of Elle, like interacting on a serious case to do with the Upside Down. Oh my God, she'd just be...
Exactly, she'd be like, it's the Upside Down, I need to fix it.
This is like my territory, yeah.
Because that's it, you know that Elle feels personally responsible for the Upside Down.
Yeah.
Like, she, as soon as she sees anyone related to her having to deal with the Upside Down and she's not involved, she's going to be peed off.
But I think what we do know is that Hopper would be like, get out of this, kid. It doesn't concern you.
Yeah.
But I honestly think in the fight of wills... wills? I meant like determination kind of will.
Yeah.
Rather than will bias. I feel like Mike would win.
I think so, because, you know, he's...
When his friends are in danger,
there's no winning against Mike when it's friends in danger. That's it. It's... You know, he'd be like, of course it is. I was involved in the Upside Down. I found Elle in the woods.
Yeah.
To begin with. And, yeah, we went through this last year. And now Will's doing it again. A party member needs assistance.
Yeah. It's just sad to me that there isn't a scene between Mike and Hopper like this before Elle's on her way, basically.
This is it. This is another one of those seasons where you're just like, oh, if only it could have gone this way.
Because I just would have loved to have seen, especially from Hopper's side, how they would interact. Because at this point, Hopper's got this big secret that he knows Mike is desperate to know.
Exactly. He knows how desperate Mike is.
I'd be so curious as to how he'd, like, go about it, you know?
Another one you mentioned earlier, completely different. And it's right at the start when we see Elle walking up to the cabin and Hopper's on the porch watching. Yeah. You were saying you just wish that you see Elle walking up and then just behind her is Mike.
Yeah.
Because they did meet in the school.
Yes.
And he's got some words.
And he's probably for Mr. Hopper. Brandishing a stick.
Brandishing a stick. Their eyes meet. And the fury just burns. And then Mike is running and swinging that stick. And Hopper's just stood there like, is this supposed to hurt?
Yeah. I could just imagine him being like, you son of a bitch. Immediately. Like that kind of fury that we do see when Mike and Elle do reunite. Just like that kind of fury. But even bigger, because at that point that is the only thing that matters, you know.
And exactly, yeah. He hasn't gotten involved with the Upside Down yet. He doesn't know what Will's going through fully just yet.
Yeah.
So this is the most important thing, is that Elle's alive. She's been kept from him by Hopper, who he's been begging for information constantly.
Yeah.
And he's literally been losing his mind. And then she's literally here, perfectly safe.
Yeah.
Watching him, seeing that he's losing his mind, and he's been preventing their contact. It's like a couple of hits with a stick is perfectly warranted, if you ask me.
Yeah, and you know, just some ideas there for some alternative scenes if anyone wants to write.
I'm starting to want to write this one now. Like, I obviously did the one where they meet in the school, and now I'm starting to want to remix that into this one
you
instead
of the
way I did it.
Jump onto my creative vines, if you will, and write this scene.
If we hadn't more points, I would just end it there.
So we do only have two more points, though. You'll probably all be happy to know. And to be honest, this isn't actually the last scene, but it kind of makes sense seeing as we've been talking about vines and Hopper. Hopper is digging into the vines. And what we find is pretty interesting.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. He's a bit more than a vine. It's an absolutely huge tunnel.
A huge tunnel. That is very upside downy with all the little spores, even.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. And we remember, obviously, Hopper has been to the Upside Down with Joyce to get Will out of there. So he knows what the Upside Down's like.
And he knows what that is.
He sees the vine and immediately knows where it's come from.
And I love, I mean, as I said, I know this, like, technically, like, the last kind of, well, it's not the last scene, actually, but...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Is it? I thought Justin's was...
No.
We've literally just watched this, people, and that's my memory for you.
No, because when we were watching it, I thought Dustin's scene was the last. But his is the last when he finds Dustin in the bin around the back of his house.
Yes, that's it. But yeah, so this last scene, technically, of Hopper, I love the camera as it...
You just love that rotating camera.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Making the world go upside down. I love how much they overuse that. It's like the token of the show, isn't it?
Yeah,
the upside down. So naturally, it being called the upside down, they love a good camera spin or camera flying into the floor and then back up the other way.
Yeah, it's a beautiful shot. Again, it is so, so well done. That's the beauty of the show, you know. You've got amazing actors. You've got an amazing story. You've got all the kind of excitement and fun of the 80s and all that kind of nostalgia, even though we're not from the 80s, all that nostalgia. And then you've just got, like, the best kind of, like, production team.
Absolutely, like, everyone does an amazing job on this show. And I mean, I'm just about to try and search this up to make sure I'm getting the right name, but isn't it Tim Ives behind the camera work?
Yes, it is Tim Ives.
Yeah, and honestly, he's an absolute genius with a camera.
Yes.
That's it. Like, they've explained before how they do picture after the snowball, where we all like to cut it off, where they're happily ever after, nothing else happens.
Yeah.
But no, it obviously goes outside of the school and then the camera flies into the floor and comes back up in the upside down. They've shown behind the scenes how they do that, and it's just work of pure genius.
Yeah.
Because that's it, in your head you've got to think of how the camera needs to be positioned to represent it having flipped upside down. It just always works so well. And I mean, here obviously in a tunnel, Woohoo is just spinning the camera upside down.
Yeah.
But that simple task of slowly turning your camera, it does so much for the scene.
Yeah. And the last scene really to discuss is, you know, Dustin arrives home. They've had that meeting, the boys, where they've said that Dart is most likely from the upside down.
Yeah.
And you kind of see the realization in Dart in Dustin's face then, where he's thinking, oh God, really? Like, I really don't want this to be true.
Yeah, and later on he's still trying to defend Dart.
Yeah.
Like, I can't, or is it earlier on? I'm not sure, but
he's always trying to defend Dart.
It's in the AV room where, you know, they're saying, oh, he could be from the upside down. And Dustin's logic there is, so, just because he's from the upside down doesn't mean he's evil.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean, later on, but yeah. I think in the next episode. But, yeah, he goes to is the word terranium? I think so.
Yeah, I think so.
Similar, if not, to terranium, tank, whatever we want to call it. And Yeah, it's smashed.
It's smashed.
Dart is not in there.
Dart ain't in there. I don't remember if he sees, like, malted flesh at this point. I know he does in an earlier scene.
I think he does, yeah.
He sees he's malted again. And then there's traces of...
blood?
Is it blood or there's is
blood
it
blood on
like
the chair and on the carpet.
Glubbings and all of that. But either way, yeah, behind the chair, Muse is no more.
Poor Muse.
Rest in pepperoni.
I knew you were going to say that.
What, specifically pepperoni?
Yeah.
I need to work on my words.
I know you too well. That's the problem. But yes, rest in peace to little Muse. It's not the best way to go. I mean, quite a unique way to go.
Well, Rippy's getting quite ripped into.
What?
R.I.P. He's getting right ripped into.
Oh my God, people. Can you tell this man became a dad?
Did I? What are you talking about?
There's two cameras right there with two children.
They're mine?
Are you calling me Sean the Slut Wheeler?
If I was, I think I'd be outside right now, sleeping in the car.
This has gone to places I didn't expect it to.
That's us. It always does. We can't stay on topic to save our lives.
No, we can't. But I actually think that rounds up this episode of Will the Wise. And to be fair, we only had one interruption from the baby, so that's pretty good.
That's not bad at all, you know. And the fact that we're only, let's call it 7 minutes over an hour, that's not bad for us.
That is really good. Good going for us. Well done,
woo,
us.
Woo.
We even had time to add in ridiculous moments as well.
Yeah, we did have a season 3 tangent, but...
Yeah, I was thinking about that when you were talking about season 3. I was like, here we go again.
As I started talking about it, I was like, no. But...
Too late.
It was too late. I said it and I wasn't cutting it out. So.
No.
Deal with it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us again for our random talks and rewatch of season 2, Will the Wise.
Indeed, and I hope you join us next time for Dig Dug.
Thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you very much indeed.
Oh, and don't forget, we now have a YouTube channel where you can see the clips that we are talking about on the screen.
Yes, indeed.
Couple's Guide to Stranger Things?
Exactly the same.
Go searching, people. Thank you very much.
Hasta la vista,
baby.